Let me introduce myself. I'm Nelson Westreich. I work at Sunnybrook Hospital, and I run the Adolescent Inpatient Unit. And this is, go ahead, Jeremy.
I'm Jeremy Cohen. I have a Master of Social Work. I have a private practice, and I work with a consultant.
So Jeremy and I work very closely together, and it's really a great privilege to present this program with you this evening. And Jeremy and I are going to have this being lots of fun and interactive. But I do want to spend a few moments, and I've given you a handout, of going through some techniques, because we had some questions in the last session about specifics and techniques of dealing with our kids. Because this session is about how to talk and listen to your teenager. And I've taken this from the work of Thomas Felland, and his book is called Surviving Your Adolescence. What is our job as a parent? And how do we do our interventions? The first thing we need to ask is, does this problem need my attention or intervention? Not everything that's going to be going on with my child is going to need a communication or an intervention. And if it does need an intervention, if I decide that I do need to communicate something, then how involved should I try to get in this story? Now let me ask you this. What is the main thing that is happening to an adolescent? What is the main thing they are struggling for? Independence. And what is the main thing that we as parents of adolescents are struggling with? Letting go, okay? Letting go. So we have a problem. The kids want independence, and we want to keep them. How do we deal with that? So Felland says there's actually four styles of communication, four styles of intervention. And these interventions go from the least intrusive to the most intrusive. When I see something going on with my 14-year-old girl who's coming home after curfew, and I told her she had to be in at 11:22, and she's now come in at 11:37, what am I going to do? Am I just going to observe this behavior? Am I going to just observe this? I see it. I'm not saying anything right now. Observation does not mean I'm neglectful. I'm seeing what's going on. I am observing what has happened and what is taking place here, but I'm not saying anything. That's one level of communication or intervention with my child. But a more intrusive one, if we move down one notch, is being an advisor to my child. I'm going to advise my child when they've come in at 11:42, okay, about the deleterious effects of being out too late by themselves and being 14 years of age. It's a different level of intervention. Not the observer, I'm now advising them. Or I could be the negotiator, which is even more intrusive. Starting to negotiate their social plans and starting to negotiate where they're going to go next time and how they're going to go the next time. I'm becoming more involved. I'm asking for what more control. But what does the child want? More independence. Or I can do the ultimate. And the ultimate is, I will be the director. You've come in at 11:42. I'm now your director. You don't go anywhere. You don't do anything. You don't see anybody or say anything without my direction. You think kids love that? But you know, depending on the situation, our interventions are going to need to be along this continuum. But each one has its price, and each one has its advantages. But how do I know where I start with these interventions? First of all, what's going to influence my intervention? How is my kid doing in general? I have a kid who's at USDS, I have a child who's at CHAT, I have a child who's in public school. They're doing very, very well, they're very, very polite, and they've come in 10 or 15 minutes late for curfew. The kid is a wonderful child. Am I going to start becoming a director with this kid because of that behavior? I'm going to cause some problems if I start to become a director. That's an observation. And how good is your relationship in general when I start to tell them, you know what, when I was in high school and I had a science project, I studied weeks and weeks and weeks before. When that child comes in late that night and you were expecting her, because this is, you know, your oldest 14-year-old girl, and she comes in late, and you're watching, and she went out with a group of friends, and some of them were boys. What is your state of mind like when that kid comes in late? How anxious are you? How angry are you? And therefore, how effective is your communication and your intervention going to be with your child at that time? And lastly, how serious is this problem? Somebody asked me before, I talked about isolation. If you know your child's constantly isolating themselves, you need to be concerned. But if your kid gets in a bad mood and isolates themselves in their room for 15 or 20 minutes, is that a serious problem? Do they have a mental disorder? If I overreact to situations, if everything is a major deal, if I'm going to take the position of negotiator or director every time, every place, in every instance, then if it's not a serious problem, I'm going to cause and make some serious problems. Now, there are four cardinal sins, according to Phelan. Four no-nos. And we could all relate to this. Remember when your parents would give you that spontaneous problem discussion? You're running out of the door, you are late for your event, whatever it is, and all of a sudden there's going to be this spontaneous problem discussion as you want to leave the house. Who enjoys nagging? Nagging's not going to be an effective intervention or insight transplants. Giving them all of the wisdom that you have had and all of the mistakes that you've made. You're going to project that inside of them right now and give them all those immediate insights. Or arguing. How many people here have ever argued with their children? Am I the only one who's arguing with their kids? But it's not really going to be all that effective to argue, certainly consistently argue with your child. Now, what we've decided to do this evening, Jeremy and myself, and Jeremy's going to lead us in the next discussion, is we're going to break you off into groups. I'm going to be the director for a moment. And we're going to put you in corners of the room, and we're going to have you discuss one of these scenarios. Let's first get you in the room. So let's take groups of 8 or 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I hope you guys aren't good friends. But you guys can go in that corner over there. Can you just take your chairs over there? All right. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you can go, you can just stay right here. And you folks over here, that means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Here, you can make a group back here. Can you move over here? The last row? Okay. Here we have another group here. Get yourself in a circle so everybody can participate in this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Guys, why don't you come in this corner over here?
Okay. So if we can have everybody just come back together. I don't want you to leave your seats. If you can just stay in your seats right now. And I know that there's probably a pile of wisdom coming out of each one of these groups at this moment. But here's what I'd like to do. So everyone's had a chance to look this over. And really the common theme that I've asked everybody to look at is what are the issues that would be of concern for you? And what would be places, behaviors that you would look at where you think, quite frankly, it is different, but it's not terribly abnormal. And then at the end of the day, when you draw a line under that, how comfortable or uncomfortable are you and what kind of intervention would you have? I'm going to go around and we're going to ask you to raise each one of those points. In other words, what are you comfortable with? What are you uncomfortable with? And what level of intervention would you have? So if you can just make sure that there's one person in each one of the groups, we're going to start by going around and starting right here. We have one person who can speak. You were doing good, pretty good, actually. She was? Okay. So, okay, what would you say was something that was disconcerting, something that was uncomfortable? You were looking at some of the information, and you were thinking, this makes us, as a group, uncomfortable.
Just being a little bit more secretive.
Can everyone hear what she's saying? Okay, so the point she raised was a little bit of secretive behavior, not sharing with the family. Okay, so that was an issue of concern. Normalcy, I mean, changes perhaps, but things that you... So the remark, I don't know if you can hear on the other side, but basically a little bit of individuation, right? Separating a little bit from the family. So by the way, it's very interesting. The points that you raise actually are very close when you think about it, right? There's not a great discrepancy between those two pieces of information. What would your level of intervention be? You're going to keep your eyes open, and you're not going to make a heavy-duty intervention at this point. Right, okay, very good, very good. That's an important factor, by the way. The whole idea of the child seems to be doing well in school, seems to be doing relatively well socially. What you're saying is there's other measures that we have. We may be seeing something a little bit different, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're off the track altogether. And important social indicators, school, social, et cetera, that if those things are going well, then maybe you don't have to hit the panic button yet. So basically what you're saying is, okay, it's a difference, but I'm still going to watch. I'm not going to hit the panic button. Okay, thank you. How about this group here? Anyone who's speaking on behalf of the group? You can't, if you're a doctor, you can't bill for this. I just want you to know that. Okay, good.
One opinion was to act as an observer,
right,
and accept the child's behavior as normal transmission of the speech problem.
Right.
But ensure that the child knows that his parents are concerned, and would like to be available to listen to you,
right,
if you want to talk and care while you're here. When you're ready, I understand you need your privacy, and I'm not going to interfere, but when you're ready, if you want to talk,
right,
with care.
That's great. That's idea one.
Right.
Okay.
So
idea two. Can everyone hear this? You hear this? Well, we know who the other opinion is.
Well, the opinion was follows after that, because if you don't get any results based on that, I mean, that's the first part of it. So it's not opinion one, opinion two. It's opinion one, A, and two.
Okay. Okay, so what you're saying is that's good as a starting point.
Right.
What you would do is, after you keep your eye on it, if you're not satisfied with what's happening, you're going to see if it needs something more intensive.
Right.
Okay. What is the more intensive, by the way?
It depends. I mean, one of the ways that I said in my family, which we do, is we try to know really well who our kids' friends are. Not mm-hmm. to tell them who they have to be friends with, but
right.
we know them well so that we can be comfortable talking to them.
Right.
And usually within the group that they are, we can find out what's the issue that's going on. Not necessarily bring it back to say, aha, I know what the issue is now, but now at least we know we're dealing with it.
Right.
Then we can come back and see how it fits into our family life.
Let me tell you what's similar about what the two of you are raising. You're both looking for where is health, and how do you define where health is? And when you start to get signals of, I'm not sure if I'm looking at something healthy, how do I keep my eye on that? So the truth is I think you may be talking about two different phases of the same approach, but at the end of the day, I think you're pulling in the same direction. You want to make sure there's health. And you want to make sure that if there's something I need to know about, I want to be able to at least be alerted to it. I'm not going to be able to find myself in a situation where, how come this has snuck up on me? So I'm not hearing...
The question was, where do you get your information from?
Okay.
And there are some people who really need to get the information directly
from
the kid.
Right.
If the kid is willing to get the information.
Right.
And
there's
another...
Our children, the great communicators, right? Right. More great communicators. Right. So really what you're talking about is different levels of intervention. How intensive is that intervention going to be? So by the way, I just want to point out one thing. The idea of getting the information is really one level of intervention. The question is, what are you after? Right? So you have to be sensitive to the idea that if I'm really after this information, it feels it's secretive, I'm not getting what I want. So the question is, how far are you prepared to push? In other words, you may get the information you're looking for, but how much damage did you do getting there? Okay, so that was very good. This group here? Who's your group leader?
Yeah,
take me to your leader.
Wasn't it clear leader because we've had an awful lot of contributions from pretty much everyone in the group?
Okay.
But she had the oldest team.
And she's talking, so she must be the leader. We'll ask her husband.
you know, obviously we're concerned about the isolating behavior and an awful lot of time on the computer, which might
be right, right. Very good point. Right.
You might want to know that relationship.
That's right.
You know, so that's, you know, we can talk about that if you're thinking about some sort of abuse of the computer going on, and or whether it's entirely innocent. So it's sort of a question of how much sleep we were allowed, and that's
right.
Being interrupted us. Okay.
So let me ask you, by the way, because that's very clever, but the question is that a sneaky approach or is that just a respectful approach? Sorry? Okay, so I'm just going to repeat the remark. So first of all, this group was suggesting a couple of things. One is that in regard to the internet, that potentially could be a level of concern. There could be reasons. We don't know what's happening with internet. Do we actually have to be doing an investigation there? And then the other part that was mentioned was the whole idea of maybe you should sit down with the child, take the child out to a movie, sit down at dinner, a little bit of private time. I was asking, is that a sneaky approach? Because you already have an agenda, right? So do you think that's a sneaky approach, by the way? Okay. Right. So I just want to say. Let me just repeat what was said. I asked the question: is that sneaky? Is that sneaky to be taking a child out for a dinner, a movie, or whatever the case may be, to speak to them? The answer was: we've been sneaking green beans into their potatoes for years. Why not? Well-intentioned sneakiness is appropriate. Let me just say something: that this conference is called positive parenting. Positive parenting is not about the notion of, I want to feel good at the end of the day. Positive parenting is about having success. And the idea is you don't want to walk into a situation blind if there's something you're already concerned about. If you are thinking the something that doesn't quite feel right, then absolutely you should be thinking about, how do I approach a situation? By the way, I would say it's not only a good idea, I would say it's not only not sneaky, I would say it's extremely respectful. That if a child feels you're going to take the time to invite him or her out, to sit down with them, they're probably going to love it. And they won't mind that discussion. And by the way, it's going to be an honest discussion because that's the information that's coming out. So good suggestions. Was there anything else? Okay, we're going to move on to the next group. This group over here. We have a speaker. You're going to have to speak loud. So are you seeing normal behavior, frightening behavior?
Normal behavior.
Okay.
And just connect with the kid.
Right.
At this point, I'd say connect.
Okay.
Is everything okay?
Okay.
You don't want to come to a little league with us.
Right.
Okay, so
right. You're not scared by what you see.
I'm not scared.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay, good. Any other last points? Okay. Could be.
One last point I think, too, is on the secretiveness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it takes the loaded judgment out of it,
and right.
It makes it normal.
Right. Did everybody hear that? That was actually a very important point.
No.
Did everyone hear that?
No.
Let me repeat it. So you'll see that the word secretive actually appears in this scenario. And it was suggested, let's not call it secretive. Right? What was the word you used?
Private.
More private. Right? I don't think any of us would disagree that there's an appropriate place for that. Now, of course, we're always talking judgment, right? How far is too far, right? So we don't ask our children anymore, you know, how's your stomach been today, right? 14 years old, we're hoping that they've got that mostly under control. If there's a problem, maybe they'll come to us. At the same time, so we recognize privacy, by the way. We do recognize privacy. The question is, on a social level, this enters a whole new domain. I want to point out something, by the way. Just as you think you've got your kids pretty well figured out and something goes wrong, we say to ourselves, why is it that my kids or kid is not doing well anymore? The answer is, there may not be anything wrong with what's going on at all. The truth of the matter is you had the old level of development figured out, and they're now entering a new level of development. You're the problem. You haven't figured out how to deal with this yet. Right? Okay. We didn't get to this group yet.
Most of the things that
you have to speak loud.
Most of the things that we said, I think, were mentioned by most of the groups already.
This is a man who knows how to take care of time.
Basically, we also felt the changes were pretty normal. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary. We thought, yeah, being an observer is probably the best approach to take right now. We wanted to let the child know, though, and, you know, keep those bridges open, keep a relationship there, make sure that they know that we're there. If they do want to speak to us, they can. That we like to hear from them. No, they don't have to tell us everything, but, you know, we like to hear what's going on. We're interested. We're concerned about them. And, you know, without any accusing or anything like that, just make sure that they know that there's still a strong, healthy relationship that we have with the child.
Right. So basically, you see normalcy, and you'd have an observer status. You're not going to have a heavy intervention.
I think that's what most of
right.
us thought, yeah.
Right. Okay, so let me just try pulling a little bit of this together. I think really, for the most part, we've said very much the same things. I think we see pretty much a healthy scenario. The truth of the matter is that for parents, it's not just children who struggle when kids grow up. It's parents who struggle when kids grow up. And the truth of the matter is, I think every one of us who's ever had a scenario where we've come in contact with kids who are changing, we would, I think, acknowledge that we've changed too. Those changes are hard to come by. Right? Because we don't always know what is the baseline. How far am I allowed to go on this? What's healthy? What's not healthy? So I think for the most part, this scenario, most of you, virtually across the board, I think, have pretty much said it's a pretty healthy scenario. So I would agree with that. I just want to tell you something very interesting. A long time ago, I was working with a psychiatrist. And he had a seminar going on. There were several hundred therapists in the room of all ilks and calibers. And he brought this videotape of a family that he had worked with. His specialty was working with families. He actually was instrumental in creating the whole concept of family therapy. And he came out and he showed this family. We watched this clip for maybe 5-10 minutes. And then he let us loose and said, okay, what do you think? Very dangerous, an audience of therapists. And that's the last thing you want to do. So, of course, they came up with every pathology that you can possibly imagine. He ended up turning around saying, folks, I understand what you're saying. I even understand why you're saying what you're saying. Those are all places, those are all cues, places where perhaps there might be more attention necessary. But I have to tell you, this is a normal, healthy family. I would leave them alone, and so should you. So as parents, I think that's very much the scenario with us as well. We're challenged on one level, and on the other level, we have to try and find ourselves keeping our eyes open. Okay, let's wrap up this piece.
Okay, what we're going to do now, actually, is we're going to take a look at scenario 3. Everyone open up to scenario 3, and we want you to spend 5 moments, again, talking in your group about scenario 3, going through the guide questions, and then we're going to have, again, a broad discussion amongst us.
Okay.
Okay, and then you'll wrap it up at the end.
Yeah, so you'll do 3.
Yeah, I'll do 3, and then you'll have to get 3 questions.
You get to carry this.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good. It's good.
Use that minutia story at the end, but that was cool.
I don't have another story.
Okay.
I do have
one. Okay, good. So we're on scenario 3, right? Okay, let's see if you have any concerns here. Let's discuss this in your group for a few moments and see if you have any concerns and what you would do. How would you deal with this? Okay, folks, we're going to wrap it up here. Shh. All right. Okay, let's hear from this group here first, okay? What are you concerned about? What is bothering you in this scenario? Do you have a volunteer? Okay, do you want to stand up, by the way? I'm sorry, your name is? Donna, your last name?
Banks.
And your credentials? Do you have kids? How old are they?
16, 14, and 11.
Okay, that's great credentials. Okay, that's great credentials. You qualify. Okay, so what are you worried about here?
Well, I'm worried about a number of things. Number one, the parents aren't together ought to do. The father defends it, and the mother is concerned about it, but she's totally, totally, what was the term we used? She's ineffective, she's powerless to do anything about it, because the kid undermines the father sides with the kid is disrespectful toward her and undermines her, and the parents have to work together.
Okay. Is that the main problem that you see here?
That's a huge one.
Okay.
The kid is the big person, the parents are the people, you know?
Okay.
So the kid develops a pure orientation because he doesn't have respect for either of his parents. There's no respect there for either of his parents. He's not taking direction from them. He's developed a pure orientation.
Okay. I'm going to stop you there because you're so good. I want to make sure we can facilitate some more discussion. So you've identified an initial issue here, that the mother and the father do not seem to be on the same page, and therefore the child seems to be doing their own thing, and therefore the child seems to be identifying with a peer group rather than what the norm that his parents would like. Now let's take this problem. Who would like to be a psychiatrist, right? And take this to the next step. What else is happening in this problem? I think you started, but what other group here would like to tell me where else is this problem going? What else is the subplot that's not being spelled out here? Because there's some really important issue here. Tell me about this relationship between mother and father. You are again? Do you want to stand up, please? That way we can hear you. Want to say, and your credentials? You got kids?
I've got kids. My credentials, my oldest one is 12.
Okay, that's good. That's a good credential. That's good. Okay, now both groups so far have identified, you've embellished it a bit, okay, about how mom and dad are separate. But I want to know, it was good, thank you, but I want to know if there's a group here that wants to take this one step further. Is there anything else that's happening here dynamically between mom and dad that we need to understand? My wife can't say anything, you know what to say. Is there anyone else here that, what is happening in this, let's be marital therapists for a second. What is happening between mom and dad? What's the one word you would use to describe the relationship the mom and dad have?
Fragmented.
Anybody want to use any other words? Abuse. Abuse. Tell me about it. Stand up. Your name is? What? Okay, Deniadler, you have kids? Okay, so tell me about this abuse. What's happening? Why do you say that? That's a strong word. How many kids? Ah, okay. Okay, all right. Now, she's used the word, it's a heavy-duty word, right? We throw it around a lot, but you seem to feel that this is an abusive relationship, and the proof that you're bringing for that is that the father denigrates mom in front of the child, correct? How many of you would raise your hands? How many would you agree that you suspect that this is some kind of abusive relationship? How many of you would like to defend this man and say this is not an abusive relationship? Okay, we got some guys over here. Okay, stand up. Stand up. Oh, my. Okay, here you go. Shh, I'm sorry, your name is? I'm sorry, what's your name? Moshe. Okay. Ooh, you think? Yes, okay. Ooh.
I'm assuming that there might be a situation where they spoke, on their bedroom. They discussed the thing, but she's really not ready to compromise, to go with the possibility
So you feel, in this case, you feel mom is extreme or dad's extreme? You tell me.
No, I'm not saying that the dad is right.
Oh. But you're, but, oh, there's, so what's happening?
What's happening?
Yes. Okay, Moshe, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to throw in a fact here, okay? And I want to see how you're going to respond to this. Because Moshe is saying, we don't know. Mom has her view, and dad has his view. But they've been called to the school. And the school presents evidence that the child has not only been smoking marijuana in school, but has been the key distributor of the marijuana in school, and brings two teachers and the marijuana from his locker and shows that to you. And dad stands there at the meeting and he says, I do not believe you, and I will sue this school. This is a true story. I will sue this school. Now, Moshe, factor that in now, and I want to hear your response. You don't agree with dad? Okay, now if you factor that in, what is happening? Why is dad standing there? Moshe, you can sit down. You did great. Why is dad standing there when there's clear evidence from the school? They produce the marijuana, they produce the locker and two teachers. Why is dad standing there and saying, I don't believe you, I'm suing the school?
Because he doesn't want to admit he's been wrong all along.
He doesn't want to admit he's been wrong. Anyone else want to share something else? What else is he doing? What is he doing? But what's happening in terms of the dynamic relationship with him and his wife? What's he doing? I'm sorry, Moshe, you had your chance. 1 second, yes? Well, what he's doing is, against obvious, overwhelming evidence, he is still attempting to undermine his wife and align with this boy. That's the triangular dynamic over here. That the boy is being used, okay, and the father is fueling that in an abusive relationship. And despite the overwhelming evidence, this is a father who communicates negatively to his wife in front of his children, who aligns with his child, and despite his better judgment, goes ahead and sues the school.
Maybe the father grows it.
I'm sorry? maybe the father grows it. Okay. Now, we're going to end this in a moment. Where would your initial intervention be? Because this child is now brought to the psychiatrist or social worker's office and says, Here's this 16-year-old Nudnik who's using marijuana. Mom and dad, they come to you and they say, Moshe, solve our problem. He's the problem. And I'm going to give you all license right now. What is your initial intervention? Are you going to take this child into psychoanalytical psychotherapy, lie him down on a sofa and talk to him day and night? What's your intervention going to be? I'm sorry? How many people think that the intervention should be on the level of mom and dad? What happens, though, if mom and dad don't want to go? If dad doesn't want to go to the therapy, then what would the intervention be?
Take away the car keys for one.
From dad? Take away dad's allowance? What?
Pick and choose what you're going to address with your kid.
Right, but the...
Right.
That's right. You're correct. You're correct in theory, right? That's what you should be doing. But we have a dysfunctional situation here, right? We have a mom and a dad who are in an abusive marriage, a dad who delegitimizes mom, okay? There's no power here. There's no entity in this to contain this child. This child's going to do whatever they want. The initial intervention, I would agree, is an attempt to get this mom and dad together in therapy. And if dad will not go to the therapy then becomes what? Mother going to therapy so she can come to a recognition that she's in an abusive marriage. And that's where the changes will begin within this dynamic. Now, this case scenario is a little bit different because here we're talking about observer, negotiator, advisor, director, right? But in some sense, all this doesn't have its relevance because the very system of communication, the basis of a mom and dad who are together, is not there. And therefore, the intervention needs not just to be on behalf of the child, but on behalf of the family system and a mom and dad. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about with this problem. There's some truths to this problem. And I'm sorry? Moshe's been with me all night. He's been asking me the hard questions. Yes.
Right?
this situation is already after the fact. This is an out-of-control situation, and the only hope for containment for this situation is a mom and dad who are going to be brought together to focus just on the child, okay? And for the child to speak, you know, to go to some kind of therapist somewhere is not going to resolve the issue here. The family needs to be dealt with. Mom and dad need to be dealt with. I'm sorry? Well, it's not a it's possibly a theory, Jeremy, but the child's 16, right? And the law is, I don't know if your folks are familiar with the law, but if there's an issue of child safety, the law is that we are concerned about the child up to the 15th birthday to the last hour. When the child at midnight turns 16, the law doesn't care. The kid can be beaten, can be neglected, can be left out by themselves, right, at nighttime, and you call Jewish Family Children's Service, the CAS, and the legal mandate is they will not respond. If they want to respond with the police, an individual can call the police. If the child's on his 15th birthday and you call, you'll have intermediate action. There's a serious problem with the law, but that's the reality. That's the reality that we're dealing with. So there would be no Children's Service or Jewish Family Service involved with this case. Right. The doctor has an obligation, or the therapist has an obligation to say, I have to take away this child's license or they can't drive, but that is as far as you'll be able to go. So Jeremy's just going to make some concluding statements, okay, from our little seminar here.
Go ahead, Jeremy. I just a couple of brief remarks. First of all, as you can tell, we've really taken a nutshell of time, really a very small amount of time. We really haven't taken all the time that I'm sure would be justifying, you know, all of the good questions. Let me just say a couple of things. First of all, if you're feeling depressed, it's probably because you were in Dr. Westreich's last session. Don't worry, that'll wear off. A couple of things. So look, the reality is that in a scenario where you have a family that's not functional, and by the way, in our first case, that was pretty obvious to everybody. We really saw that everything seemed to fit pretty much together. There was a couple of question marks. Wasn't a big deal in terms of concern. In our second scenario, it was. We were much more worried. I just want to point out a couple of things. First of all, one of the keys is, and we can see this in the second scenario, is how well do parents work together? You know, since we're always entering new domains, and that's the reality, folks. We're always entering new domains. And by the way, philosophically, and I'm sure on other levels, you know, even after our kids are gone, we could probably use the same remark. But certainly, as it applies to our children, we're always entering new domains. It means that we always have to be prepared to keep our eyes open. What kind of adaptation do I have to make to that scenario? So that, I think that's an important factor. The reality is we're affected by the very nature of the society we live in. Tremendous speed. I mean, the obligations of time, people not going to bed, not sleeping, right? Studies show time and time again, we are not sleeping. People are exhausted, frustrated, driving to and from offices, responsibilities at our places of work, responsibilities at home, responsibilities with our partners. All of these things adds up, rests on everybody's shoulders individually, and of course, we're affected differently by it, but the reality is we're affected. And of course, it's going to have an impact on our kids for more reason than one. A, we're impacted, we may be tired. B, our kids are watching. If we're talking about teaching, some of its words, some of its actions. How well do we handle the stresses that comes our way? How do we handle our frustrations? How do we handle our anger, our tempers? Those are all things that our kids in some way or another are going to be looking at. If I was going to say that there's probably two or three, and again, these are just dashing remarks, they're not inclusive, and they're certainly not going to be detailed enough. If I was going to make a couple of remarks, I would say the following. One is communication is key. It's an old term. It's been bandied around. The reality is we have to make sure that not only are we keeping our eyes open, but that we're taking the time to speak. It's to our partners. It's to our kids. Sometimes, by the way, it's to extended members of the family who may also be involved, grandparents or aunts and uncles who also play a greater role sometimes in our families. It's important to be able to communicate. We have to be clear about where we're coming from, where we're going to. Another thing that's really important, in particular because of the speed of our lives, is we have to have opportunities to recharge. The reality is that if we don't take the time to rest, if we don't take the time to feel stronger, then that's exactly how we enter the next day. Now, by the way, our realities are also that we can't just take off two trips to the Bahamas for weekend jaunts once a month, which would be lovely, not terribly realistic for the vast majority of us. But that doesn't mean that there aren't miniature opportunities that we could be and actually should be looking at. So for example, how do we treat the end of every day, right? So one of the things that studies are showing is that people jump from their busy day into trying to sleep, and they don't sleep well quite often, right? So what are we doing in terms of our sleep hygiene? You know, small things that add up, we have to be creating a plan in terms of how do we recharge. So that's another factor that I'd say is really important. At the end of the day, what we're really looking for is balance. How do we make sure that, you know, with all of the demands that are being put on us, how do we make sure that we're actually finding ourselves in a balanced scenario? Just to close on this remark, this same psychiatrist I was talking about, Dr. Salvador Mnuchin, was working with a family, and he was quite an interesting man. He was very insightful, had many years of experience. When I was working with him, he was in his mid to late 60s already. And the truth of the matter is he was sitting with this very lovely family, but things weren't going well. And one of the things that was very apparent was this father was extremely successful. And the wife, the husband and wife scenario, right, she was very happy because it meant that a lot of the things that she never had as a child, she was going to get. So she lived in a beautiful house and she drove a beautiful car. But she felt her husband wasn't there enough. And Dr. Mnuchin said something very simply. To the husband, who are you married to? Are you married to your business or are you married to your family? And at the end of the day, every one of us has to ask that question because the challenges that come to us from outside of our own homes continuously pull us away from our families. And repeatedly we say to ourselves, I'll get to it, but not now. The truth of the matter is we have to be thinking of right now. And so today we had a couple of opportunities. I wish everybody much strength and success in our endeavors. It's a very noble cause, a very important cause. I think our very society rests on the foundations of our success, and I wish that for everyone here. Thank you for participating.